It's Most Things Kenobi, an elegant podcast for a more civilized fandom.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Most Things Kenobi, a podcast about Obi-Wan Kenobi and all things Star Wars. I'm your host, Lauren.
And I'm your host, Leanne.
This week, we are talking about Hutt Slayer Leia.
Yes.
Which we've never delved into before.
Not a lot of people delve into the fact that she's a badass in the way that she killed a goddamn Hutt.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, come on. Those are hard to dispose of.
What a way to put it.
Well, I mean, you see it through Clone Wars and, you know, and you just, they're not easy. They're not easy to deal with, to get rid of. We saw it in The Mandalorian, too. There's Hutts that he has to deal with. They're just not easy to dispose of.
Well, they're crime lords. They have a crime syndicate. And they're generally a bit gross.
They're slovenly.
Yes, yes. And they clearly have no respect for life, since they have no problem taking slaves, keeping people as entertainment, feeding them to rancors, etc.
Yeah, they are the seven deadly sins that we talked about, all wrapped up into one giant slug form.
Yeah. Yes.
I do appreciate the fact that George Lucas tried to make what we just described, you know, like this disgusting, like visually disgusting character.
Yeah.
All of the bad things that a person could be kind of wrapped up into one and visually unappealing. You know what I mean?
Yes. It's like their outer, quote unquote, beauty reflects their inner beauty. Like,
there
is no inner beauty, so there is no outer beauty. You know, not that those things correlate in real life, but in film, it's definitely a way to show that the external sickness, you know, he even has like green slime on his mouth.
Yes, he most certainly has an upper respiratory infection.
Yes, he does.
Because we don't see that with the other Hutts. They're not slobbering and drooling and coughing up. You know, like, that seems like, do you need some,
Flonies?
Do you need an inhaler? Yeah.
Okay, so Hutt Slayer is a term now, but it was not back in the day. For those who don't know, it's, you know, Leia in the gold bikini from Return of the Jedi. And it was originally always referred to as Slave Leia.
Right.
And that was just kind of how it was known. And even Carrie Fisher said that she, like, came to terms with that. Like, she was fine with it. She didn't have a problem with it. She chose to reframe that whole era for Leia as a moment of strength as opposed to, like, a moment of her being vulnerable and weak and taken as a slave. So then Disney acquires Star Wars in 2012 and they are uncomfortable with the term slave. So they don't like Slave Leia, and they also didn't like the ship Slave One or whatever.
Boba's
ship. Yeah. So they wanted to rename all of this stuff, which Carrie Fisher said was ridiculous. Like, she came out and said that she didn't agree with that. She thought it was silly. But Disney kind of, like, stuck to their guns and decided to not make any more, quote, Slave Leia products.
Right.
And a fan is the one who said, why don't we reframe it as Hutt Slayer Leia? Claudia Gray loved that and wrote it into the book Bloodline, making it canon.
Yes. And I remember reading the book, and I actually have the quote here because I figured it would come up. I remember reading the book and this coming up in the book, and I thought, oh my God, it's so empowering. The quote goes like this, and this is not a spoiler alert. doesn't give anything away. So for those who haven't read it, it's not a big deal. The quote goes like this. "Hut Slayer," Rin Riven breathed in genuine reverence. "This is what we call you among ourselves, and it is a far greater title than either senator or princess could ever be. The Nyctos know you for the warrior you are, Hut Slayer, and you will always have friends among us."
Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Because Leia goes to meet this group of people in the story and introduces herself, and they say, "No, you are Hut Slayer to us, and that's what you'll always be known as."
That's so awesome.
And it's, like, so fitting. It's great. I mean, it's a hell of a title. I mean, it's...
Yeah.
She took a fucking hut down, and the way she did it with her own chain. Talk about taking your power back.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah, I mean, she took her... The tool Jabba was using to humiliate her... And it became her weapon. Like,
yeah.
It's so fucking awesome.
And how amazing is it that all this other chaos is going on, Luke and Han and all the things, all the parts are moving. And she's, "Well, I'm not just going to stand here. I see an opportunity. He's not going anywhere. Let me climb up this giant body and suffocate his ass." And I love, and the way they film it. Like her yanking and his tongue like falling out.
It's so gross.
It's so great. It's so good.
Yeah.
Self-rescuing princess to the very end. To the very end.
So fucking good. My God. And like the fact that she's in this kind of vulnerable outfit and she's got like cloth booties on and.
Yeah. Totally, you know, impractical.
Like, yes. My God. I bet it's. Like, I would just imagine I'd be slipping all over the place in those socks.
Maybe they were good for climbing up on that slimy body of his.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's so gross.
You know? Disgusting.
Well, it is so gross. You know, originally, George Lucas had kind of planned the Hutts as humans that had evolved, like they had a skin disease and that's how they became Hutts. Because
I'm out.
Yeah, I'm right
out. No, nope.
It's so gross.
I can't do skin conditions. I can't do that. Had he done that, I may not be a fan to this day. I may not have been able to watch it. Yeah, honest to God,
skip all the parts with Jabba.
That is, or so any Hutt. I can't even.
Sorry, I've ruined it now.
No, you're fine. It's... God. Ew. Well,
there's a great quote from Claudia Gray about why she wanted to write this in. And she said, "Not only did I like recasting that outfit as a memory of Leia being really strong and kick-ass, but think about it. For a human being to kill a Hutt with her bare hands, that's unbelievable. Anybody who would be able to pull that off would be remembered for it. That would be a legend."
Yes, a legend, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like when Luke walked into the room with Palpatine and Vader and only one person walked out, and that was Luke. That's a exactly. legend. That's a fucking legend. Nobody knows what went on in there.
I know.
And only Luke walked out. And here, Leia's got next to nothing on.
Yeah.
Bound by one chain, and she's like, "I'll take care of this." Mm-hmm. With the strength of hers, and she's little. Yeah. It's very Padme. Padme kind of had to take the situation as is. And we see her with it. Doesn't she have a chain in Attack of the Clones?
Oh, I don't remember.
They're like chained to those pillars, right? Him.
Oh, yeah.
Obi-Wan, Anakin, and her. And she has a chain and she's like, whoa, lasso. Kind of. Maybe I'm embellishing it, but like, obviously that's after the fact. But I think that Padme would have done what she could in that instance. Now Padme's even smaller than Carrie Fisher.
Like, yeah,
yeah. I'm doing character names and human names. Natalie Portman is even more petite than Carrie Fisher.
Yeah,
I think, especially in their roles as the characters. So maybe. I don't know how that would have worked, but I think that was the spirit of Padme. And shit, Anakin would have done damn near the same. But that's another point of why we're talking about this, because it wasn't just any Hutt that Leia killed.
Right. perfect segue. Yeah, I mean, she literally killed the Hutt that enslaved her father and her grandmother, for that matter.
Yeah. Poetry.
It's beautiful.
Beautiful. And it's fantastic, like, full circle, because Anakin's son is dealing with the rest of them.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin's daughter deals with him.
Yeah.
And Jabba the Hutt enslaved his Anakin's mother, had no respect mm-hmm. for anyone, let alone a woman with a child, right?
Right.
Put her to work, make money off of her, that sort of thing. Tried to enslave, literally enslave Leia, the same way he enslaved so many others.
Yeah.
And she just flipped the switch on him and killed him. And it's great. It's greatly, it's symbolically fantastic.
Yeah. And it's so much more, too, than just, oh, she killed the Hutt and, like, that's, mm-hmm. that's badass. It's like, not only does she basically avenge her father's injustice, she mm-hmm. breaks the Hutt's stranglehold, people argue, on the whole galaxy, because at that point they were kind of weaker anyway. And by killing Jabba, he was, like, one of the last links in a chain. And to have Tatooine no longer under a Hutt, which is one of mm-hmm. the Outer Rim planets, so all this, like, crazy backwater gangster stuff was going on, she broke that. And, like, there's even moments in the comics, in the Vader comics, where Vader goes to Jabba to mm-hmm. get information or to, like, use him somehow. So even the, like, tie to the Empire there is broken as well. Like, it's just so fucking awesome.
How the hell can Vader go to Jabba and just not remember any of it? I know he does, and he has to, like, push it deep, deep, deep down.
Yeah.
But how could you? That's...
There's so many moments like that, even when he's still Anakin. They rescue Jabba's son.
Yeah, I know. What? I'm not getting into it. I'm gonna. There's so many things. No, dude,
get into it.
I guess I can understand a little of it, because if Palpatine is the one moving the pieces and Anakin hasn't turned yet, you could always fall back on, okay, well, we're putting Anakin in a situation that's going to ignite some fire inside him and some resentment sure. and da 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 da. But as Vader, how do you just shelve that?
It must have been like using, like, recognizing that he needed him for the greater purpose or whatever that he was using Jabba for at the time. But that is so not like Anakin or Vader to see the bigger picture. They are like hyper focused. Usually they, I'm talking about them, like they're two different people.
Well, I was going to bring it up. Perhaps he has to compartmentalize out of necessity. He can't go to Jabba as the person he used to be, the kid he once was. That's dead. According to him at this time, that's dead.
Right.
So if that's the way he can justify, I don't know. I can't do that.
Right. I couldn't either. That would be very difficult. And for him to get so angry with the Zygerians.
I know.
But I then know. Be able to control it in front of Jabba. And even, I don't remember in the Clone Wars movie when they rescue Stinky. Yeah. Jabba's son, Stinky. I don't remember if the Jedi return the son to Jabba, like, in person, or if it's just Ahsoka. I don't remember that part. So I don't remember if Anakin actually faces Jabba or is just there on Tatooine.
No, I think he's just there. Doesn't he get distracted and then Ahsoka
he's has to fighting do something? With Dooku out that's in the
what
desert.
That's what I was thinking. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that's when Ahsoka, like, manages to get the baby back. But, like, the fact that Anakin is doing this, he is... And I saw something that made me laugh out loud on Reddit. It was like, Anakin saves Jabba's son, but then Jabba goes to throw Anakin's son into the Sarlacc pit. What a dick move.
What a dick move! I didn't even think of that? What the fuck, Jabba?
Oh my God.
Zero concern, zero fucks given for any. That's a take, no give. Yeah. Zero.
Yeah. He has no moral compass whatsoever.
No. Gross. He's gross. And I'm glad that Leia choked him until his fat tongue fell out of his mouth. It's just that one detail always gets me whenever I see that scene.
They like made sure to. Well, and I think it's kind of great because he does that really gross thing when he first takes her, where he like tries to lick her and licks his lips. So it's like the next time his tongue is sticking out is because she killed him.
Yes, exactly. And it's embarrassing. He would never be caught dead. Like, he's all about the riches and having all of his people and his you know, slaves around him and food at the ready and stuff. And then he just dies and spews more, you know, saliva. It's
very, very undignified. Yeah.
It's very undignified, and I'm glad. I'm here for it. I'm sure he shit himself, too. We just didn't see it.
I know. I had the same thought.
Were you thinking it?
Oh, gross. But it's probably true.
I love it. I love it. Salacious got the fuck out of there, too. He's like, uh-uh. He,
seriously.
Gone.
Not trying to save him. Nope. Done.
I'm getting out of this fold. I don't need to be here.
So there's an angle to it I kind of want to ask you about, because you read Bloodline, and I haven't.
Yeah, but I don't know if I remember all of it.
Well, yeah.
Many years ago.
The other side of this is, isn't Leia really uncomfortable with knowing she's Vader's daughter?
Yes. And in fact, one of my favorite parts of the book is when she comes to the realization that maybe Vader wasn't what she thought. There's a moment where she gets so fucking angry that she has this thought in her head that I could kill everyone in this room as long as this person who's, I don't remember the character's name, but he was like the main antagonist, right? Mm-hmm. She has this thought, like, I could kill, if it would end his reign, I would kill everybody in this room. Like, she's really fucking angry. Then she has a pause, and she's like, whoa, what if my father, what if his motives weren't totally steeped in, you know, like, out of hate? It was to stop something worse from happening, or to save somebody, and all this stuff. She considers it all in her head. And it makes her pause, and she's like, oh, no, I don't know how I feel about all this.
Yeah. And,
like, I don't know if this is spoilery. This might be a spoiler, so just turn the volume down for, like, 30 seconds, starting now. Bail is the one that admits to her in a voice box, in, like, a music box that has a voice recording, and admits to her who her father really was, and that's, like, something she was supposed to find out long before Luke and all this stuff.
Oh, interesting.
So it got lost. Someone else found it. That's how they found out. And that's where the drama starts.
Oh, interesting. I need to read this book. I haven't read it.
It's really political. Okay, everyone, you're back. Hi. Thanks for turning it down if you turned it down. it's really political. And some of it drags on. So if you're not into that, which I'm not.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Skim the first sentence of each paragraph and you'll get the idea. But there's some really great moments of her and Han in this book. There's mention of Ben Solo. There's mention of Bail Organa. There's all kinds of goodies in the book. And of course, her in action, there's action scenes with her, like still kicking ass, still doing her thing. You know, and then there's tender moments of her like doing her hair while she's on FaceTime with Han, you know, like.
Aww.
It's cute.
See, I need to read books with something like that. I don't really think I've read anything that has any of the more tender stuff between her and Han. I have the Beth Revis book, but I haven't read it yet. So
the wedding of those two?
Yes.
Yeah. I still have to read it. It's on my list. I got a list so long.
I know.
I got to read that Dooku book.
I'm going to probably just leave a large to-read pile when I die.
In your Viking ceremony, when you die, there will be a stack of books on the boat.
Burn them with me so I can take them into the afterlife with me. Finish reading everything I don't get to.
But yeah, there's a list we got to read, but this one should be on it. This one should be on it because there are so many good moments in it.
Yeah.
And it really shows the mindset of Leia and how she accepts or doesn't accept who Anakin was.
Yeah. Well, I think they've referenced this in the book. He tortured her.
Yes.
It makes their relationship very complicated.
Very complicated. Very.
Yeah.
Ugh.
I mean, he was not great to his kids. He tortured one. He emotionally tortured the other one and then cut off his hand.
It was so they could bond.
Yeah. Toxic bonding. That's what's going on there.
Yeah. Trauma bonding.
Yeah, exactly.
But it worked out because Luke looked at his hand in that last moment through the lightsaber and said, I'm not turning into my father. The end.
It did work out for the betterment.
Because Luke is a good person.
Yes. And I'd actually want to talk about Luke just a little bit, because I know this is about Leia and Anakin, but in addition to this, like, Luke's family also suffered a lot under Jabba.
100%.
And I don't know if this is canon anymore, but there have been references, and I know there's references in the audio drama, but there might be in Legends books as well. Then, like, Jabba had, like, a water tax. He would come and take your water.
No doubt.
I think there's even a reference to, like, Luke getting beat up by some of their goons as they come to get water. I don't remember exactly the references, but Luke understands Huttese. Which maybe doesn't seem significant at first because he's on Tatooine. But unlike Han, who also understands Huttese, Han's a man of the universe. You know, like, he's gone all over the galaxy. He's had exposure. Luke is in this backwater isolation, and he still understands another language because it's so prevalent. Like, Jabba's stranglehold is so prevalent that this kid in the middle of nowhere speaks another language because of it. So, like, Leia, yes, she kind of avenges Anakin, but she also avenges Luke's family as well, who had been under this crime lord's thumb as well. And you can see the anger Luke has in Return of the Jedi. I just love when he goes to talk to Jabba, like, he's trying to, like, keep his cool, but he does get pissed. He says, that's the last mistake you'll ever make. Like, that's not something a Jedi would say.
Well, no, but there's a long-standing grudge there, and she ended it for everyone.
Yeah. It's pretty badass.
I never really thought of it that way, but when you put it in a perspective like that, it's kind of like there's nowhere you can run on Tatooine where you can escape the shadow of a Hutt. I don't mean that literally, although, but you know what I mean. The oppression, the constant, he's got men out there looking to pick for a trouble. Fight with someone like Luke. Yeah,
exactly. And Luke has such like a sense of justice that he would probably get into trouble. While Uncle Owen's trying to keep his head down, Luke is more likely to be the person to say, like, that isn't right. We shouldn't, like, just go along with it.
Huttese seems like a really difficult language to learn.
From what I read, humans can understand it, but they can't speak it.
I see. So, on the reverse, they would do the Hutts. They understand everything. They understand basic, like, right?
Yeah, they understand basic. And then they have, you know, they're using 3PO as a
translator. That's true. They have droids. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yeah. But
this makes me want to rewatch Return of the Jedi.
I know. It hit me once that, like, 3PO is not translating for Luke during that scene because the...
You're right. Yeah. He does. Because he knows.
Yes. He does sometimes for some parts of it. But when Luke is there, he's not translating. Luke understands it.
That's hot.
Yeah.
I mean, it just shows, like, you know how hard it is to learn another language. I mean, it is for us. Yeah. Okay, it's like those of us in the U.S. of A. aren't great at picking up second languages, and I'm here to tell you, I'm embarrassed by that. But Luke is intelligent; he's highly intelligent. So he picked it up. That's hot.
It is very hot. That's what I thought when I first saw it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, anyone who understands droids, like, so effortlessly, that's,
right,
like, basically binary of some kind, right?
Right, and he also understands Chewie.
Huh! Which...
Which is crazy, because he's never seen a Wookiee before.
This harkens back to the Christmas special. I needed an interpreter. I need an interpreter to tell me what the fuck all of that was.
But we don't, right? Because we would just be in pain.
Yeah, we're never, ever going to watch it again. Never.
The only time I would care is if Luke came and translated, so then I could just listen to him. But otherwise, I don't.
I think it's awesome that Luke knows this stuff. Leia, I would expect, because she was kind of raised amongst other races and probably as a soon-to-be senator would have to, you know, kind of learn the ways, and speak the languages of others. And when you start young, you can pick it up much easier. Everything.
Yes. It's easier to be bilingual or multilingual if you start basically from the beginning. And that's why I struggle. I didn't start learning a new language till I was like 15. And my it just does not stick in my brain. It's really difficult. I really struggle a lot. I can kind of understand stuff, but I can't speak it.
Yeah.
I don't know. My mind is not wired for it, that's for sure. The only other thing is that there's like a gross side to this of people who really are opposed to the renaming. And
why?
Because they think Leia was not a hero.
In what sense? They think that
the arguments I read said that she was in that position because she messed up the rescue of Han Solo, and she was only able to kill Jabba because other people like Luke and Han and 3PO were distracting people who would have protected Jabba, so she just took advantage of an opportunity, but that Luke also should have been called Hutt Slayer because without him, she wouldn't have been able to do it. It was just like this whole nasty... I went down a rabbit hole that made me sick to my stomach, kind of people saying that she deserved to be called a slave, that she is a slave, she's dressed like a slave, so we should call her a slave, and they just are opposed to anything from the original trilogy being changed.
I have news. That is not how a slave is dressed. That was rich fabric, gold.
Yeah.
It was done in a way to please Jabba visually.
I mean, unless she's a sexual slave, which is that was the implication. People were saying, they're like, we don't know what happened with Jabba, but the clothes imply. And it's like, oh, this is just so gross.
So what is she supposed to do then? Sit there, wait for Luke to rescue her, or take advantage of an opportunity? To me, that sounds like every hero.
Yeah.
You take advantage of an opportunity. Literally, Luke is on that barge thing.
He gets caught also. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he set up an opportunity, and then it goes a little sideways. That's called a plot, folks.
Well, it's, you know, we all know that there's that side of Star Wars fandom that's just ready to jump on anything that's new and hate it.
Sure.
And to me, I really like Hutt Slayer because I was uncomfortable seeing Leia in that position. Even as a kid, it made me feel really uncomfortable to see that because she had been such a strong hero. It's like the fastest way to humiliate a woman is take away her clothing and make her vulnerable on the end of a chain. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
It just like creeps me out so much. And so to be able to reframe it as a moment of strength, I think is very empowering and makes me feel a lot better about the whole thing, even though I am still a little uncomfortable with it. But, you know.
Well, bottom line, no matter what situation Leia finds herself in, from a child all the way to her dying days, she took opportunities to empower others and empowered herself. no matter what the situation. You call it whatever you want, but to me, that's a hero and that's an idol.
Yep.
I don't care what you label it. I prefer Hut Slayer.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
Yeah. Fuck you, Jabba. Our question to you this week is pretty simple. Do you prefer the term Hut Slayer when it comes to Leia, as opposed to, we'll say, Slave Leia, or just, you know, self-rescuing princess or anything else that's that goes along with the term Leia? But do you like Hut Slayer? Because we do. Let us know.
Next week, we are starting a new series. I'm really excited about this. One of our listeners kind of gave me the idea. She was saying how Ewan really impacted how we see Obi-Wan. And then I was thinking, because James is my favorite Obi-Wan. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, well, but there's also Alec Guinness. And then there's, I think it's, is it Steven Stanton? I think from Rebels. So what we're going to do is we're going to go through each of these four actors who have played Obi-Wan, giving them their own episodes. So I think the next week we're going to talk about Alec Guinness. We're just going to talk about how Alec Guinness, well, like what he brought to the character. And then the week after that, we'll do Ewan, then we'll do James, and then we'll do Steven Stanton. So it's going to be a really cool series. And then when that's done, we'll do Anakin in the future. So stick with us.
I can't wait.
It's going to be really fun. So yeah, join us back here next week for starting our new Obi-Wan series.
Yes. And we had a lot of listener comments regarding our attachment themed episode, which thank you so much for all the positive feedback we've received. It's been really awesome. We've received some very private messages about attachment in our listeners' lives, some that we're not going to read just to keep private, but we really, really loved a lot of what we got.
Yeah. Such enthusiasm for this subject. It was really cool.
It's a ponderous subject. I think about it all the time, and especially lately, so I'm really glad people enjoyed the episode. Thank you.
Yeah.
Our friends over at Scarif Podcast, shout out to Scarif Podcast. They say, love the topic. My headcanon is that attachment has been misunderstood by fans. I feel that, like in the real world, our healthy attachment to the ones we love gives us unlimited power. Which I thought was a very nice point of view.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I had I have a ton of comments, but I'm just going to read Foundling Mercantile's comment because I thought it was such a good point. She says, such a good episode. I feel like there's so many explorations in the books of how each Jedi interpreted their rules of attachment, love, and affection. There seems to be a camaraderie and affection with the disaster trio and their clones, but there is a cold detachment with the old school Jedi Council. Even at the end of the Revenge of the Sith book, Yoda admits that it was the lack of flexibility that caused their fall.
I completely agree. And I think that's the general consensus we tried to come up with, is that maybe there needed to be a little more balance with it, a little more flexibility.
And I don't know why I didn't think of this when we were talking about it, but I thought about Qui-Gon and how he's kind of both camps.
Yeah. Because
he is, and I'm talking about in Phantom Menace, not in the Legends books or anything like that. Mm-hmm. In Phantom Menace specifically, he's really sweet and affectionate to Anakin and Shmi, but he's not attached. Like, he is able to be both things. Just like Luke. Like, it doesn't keep him from doing his duty and being a good Jedi and following the Force. But he's still kind and warm and...
very.
Yeah. I think that's why when we did Who is the Best Jedi episode...
I was just thinking that.
So many people said Qui-Gon and...
The majority said Qui-Gon.
Yeah. And it makes sense.
Yeah, he's got... we need more Qui-Gon.
I know. We should probably do another Qui-Gon episode sometime soon.
Okay. So thank you again to everyone. Even, you know, the ones we didn't read just to keep them private. And, of course, the ones we did read. Everyone who chimed in. We just adore you all and love the feedback. So thank you. And thank you for listening.
And thank you so much for joining us here on the Most Things Kenobi podcast. We appreciate every single one of our patrons and are grateful for your support. If you'd like to support the podcast and become a patron as well, head over to the Most Things Kenobi Patreon. As always, you can follow us on Tumblr, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube, and don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast player. If you enjoy our podcast, feel free to rate us on Spotify and Apple. And if you need just one place to find all of these, head over to mostthingskenobi.com.
So until next time, my space twin, may the force be with you.
Always.